Paul Michael.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI.
Kansas City Community Radio.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Well, welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station. Right here in Kansas City, we've got a couple of interesting things to talk with you about during the course of the program today, but we're going to start by walking, it's only about half a block now.
It's really close.
It used to be several blocks, but now it's just really, really close where the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater has opened their production of August Wilson's Seven Guitars. And with us to tell us all about it, fill us in, and all the exciting talk about the show is Karen Paisley. She is the artistic director of the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, now in its 14th season, Karen.
I know. Who knew that could happen?
I certainly didn't.
It's kind of cool, isn't it?
It's pretty cool.
That is kind of an astonishing number, the idea that this plays 30. I guess I didn't think of it that way because I discovered it later than the others. Fences is the one most people get acquainted with
first.
And, of course, Fences was in my universe. And then when I worked at the Rep, they did Two Trains Running, and I got to work with that project. And then we did Piano Lesson, and we've done Gem of the Ocean, and we've done Jitney. So for me, I guess this is my sixth Wilson, but it's the fifth one, I think, that Met has done. So we're going to work our way through.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, eventually get to them all.
Yeah, and since we broached the subject, we both met August Wilson when he was here having his shows done at the Rep. I was introduced to him, I think it was by Peter Altman or one of his assistants.
Peter and he were good friends.
Yeah.
He had done a lot of his works in Boston where he was from. And, of course, when I moved to Kansas City, I came from New York where I'd just finished my master's, and the Rep had done a national search and found me and brought me here. And thank you to them, you know, for doing that. And part of the cool experiences that happened during that time was the opportunity to meet August Wilson and kind of see that production come together and in a really wonderful giant space. It was an extraordinary thing. And a funny story that goes along with this, that was about the time, I had written the plan for Met in New York, and then kept working on it the whole time I was here for the first 16 months. And then I decided, Bob and I decided, we're going to step away. We're going to do this now. So actually the last show, I think, that I worked on was Two Trains Running. And the set was fantastic. Oh, it was amazing. And I think it moved from the Rep down to the Gem Theater. And they were just going to kind of throw it all away because it was so big and so massive. And we were starting with nothing. I mean, like, literally nothing. And so I persuaded the technical director that if we came and got it, could we have it? Well, I hadn't factored in what it weighed, and that these pieces were unbelievably heavy. I thought all my friends were going to kill me after that day. So we loaded up an 18-wheeler and took the set for Two Trains Running. So you could say, in a factual statement, that every play that came thereafter was born of the work of August Wilson, because that was where we got the lumber, the actual set pieces for several of our first shows were harvested out of that set and kind of were the bedrock, if you will.
Well, I met Mr. Wilson, and they took me to a table where they had a flask of wine.
Oh, that's cool.
And several of us sat there. Maybe you were one of them. Maybe I didn't know you there.
Right, we wouldn't have known each other yet.
We all shared some wine, and Mr. Wilson had most of the wine when he later passed away of liver disease. I especially remember those moments. Mm-hmm. But the other thing I remember the most part of was he was wearing the same hat he had worn the previous Sunday when he was featured on 60 Minutes.
Oh, that's cool, isn't it?
So we discussed things. We talked. He was asked by me and others about how each one of his plays features a certain decade, and that's no different with Seven Guitars.
No, Seven Guitars is set in the 1930s, after the war, about 1948, when the rest of the country is having this really huge economic boom of the post-war era. All the people coming home, the factories have been outfitted during the war and converting everything over to the big manufacturing boom that came out of the late 40s into the early 50s. But that didn't happen in every neighborhood equally. So the characters that we meet in Seven Guitars, who are living in the same area in Pittsburgh, the Hill District, where he always sets everything, which is kind of such a really cool thing. After you spend time in these plays, you kind of feel like, I need to go there and really see it. But this is a backyard of a kind of a brick tenement house. And you have the people who live in these various apartments who are there, have created kind of an impromptu family. And other characters go and come, as they always do, out of his plays. People who don't live right there but are the ancillary family that come and go. I think the family component is a very big deal in all of his pieces. But this one is kind of, when we think about the way we are making our own families now, that we've all gotten so busy and people don't live right next door to their parents, or some people, like in my case, are 1,500 miles from home. Those people who are your side-by-side neighbors actually can get to be real important, but sometimes it's even your friend family. And that's kind of what these people are. We were just talking this morning about the role that food plays, that is always coming and going. And I added some because I like food on stage. It also makes actors real happy. You know, when you get to eat something that's real and it actually tastes good, that's kind of fun. We've had some food adventures so far. One of our actresses is vegan, and that character is required to eat an egg. So we had to figure out, how are we going to make a false egg? And she's been such an amazing sport and chemist, so she started working on it herself. And then we finally figured out a way to solve the problem, but it's our secret.
Well, and I won't ask either. Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Karen Paisley. She is the artistic director of The Met, and she is directing Seven Guitars, mm-hmm, by August Wilson. It is set in the 40s, as, mm-hmm, Karen said. It's going to be opening. Let's see, I guess it has opened already. It, mm-hmm, opened on the 23rd, right?
Yep. Yeah. Saturday night, and then we had the Sunday performance, and with When We Are on Monday, then Wednesday through Sunday this week, and Wednesday through Sunday next week.
And we'll run through March the 10th. The number to call for more information, 816-569-3226, or online at metkc.org. The story of a blues musician who meets his maker, so to speak, mm-hmm, and the unraveling of the story of how all this came, mm-hmm, about.
Yeah, the blues musician is Floyd. And so at the very beginning of the play, and this, I don't believe there's another one of Wilson's plays that's structured quite like this, that when you think of like a memory play, you know, like Glass Menagerie, that here we are, we meet Tom in Glass Menagerie, and then Tom takes us back, and we meet Laura and Amanda and the gentleman caller. And then we come back to the fire escape with Tom at the end of the play in Glass Menagerie by Tennessee Williams. The same idea is how this play is structured. That we see all these characters, the ancillary family, first in the opening scene. And that is approximately 1 week after Floyd came home. And it won't be a spoiler for you to tell you, because they tell you in the first scene, that he's died. And so then there's the series of really kind of wonderful magic of theater, theatricality, that allows us to kind of take the journey of that preceding week of what brought us to that moment. And it's very interesting, and I guess I'm a little biased, but I think it really is cool, because I've always been kind of like yawn, yawn, whatever, when you tell me it's a flashback play. But this isn't like that. That it actually, when I first read it, took me a second to realize that we had gone backwards in time. But that's kind of what theater can do in a really extraordinary way, and it just captures the imagination and the mind immediately and says, we're going backwards, and then with magic of light, as little as that, and some music, suddenly we as audience and the actors are in a different time, on a different day, and then we start our story, and we go. And we keep going, and keep going, and keep going, and keep going, and then we wind up back where we sort of began, but we've collected all this information and all these experiences together. And so it's an extraordinary way to tell a story. And I don't think he does it any other time. I haven't lived all the other plays yet, but I think this is the one that he's done this way. which might have been something as an artist that he was kind of experimenting with, because he didn't do it again.
How does seven guitars fit into it?
There's seven characters. So I think that what he's saying is that, you know, each of us is an instrument that we are playing ourselves, and we have the authority of our own voice in that. Which also goes to one of the cool lines that I really like when he talks about one of the characters says something to the effect of, each of us, whether we realize it or not, is responsible for what happens to us. And that doesn't mean always that you're directly responsible, but some simple act that you thought was going to be innocuous turns out not to be. Or there are consequences to something that you didn't foresee. And it doesn't go to intent, but just simply that statement, I think, is to me very meaningful, that even if something as a community turns out to be not what you wanted it to be, you know, we thought a road going here was going to be a good idea. It turns out that's a mess.
You know, well, that happens.
Yeah, that happens. And it also happens, like, on the personal level. You know, you make a decision to buy this, and then it turns out that this happens, and this happens, and what was this glorious decision turns out to be the albatross. You know, but there's little micro decisions, too, that we're making every minute of the day that ultimately add up to our values and our character. And that's kind of what he's exploring in this, I think. You know, this wonderful character with tragic flaw. And so he's really very engaging. Yet, like other big characters, like in the Greek world, the characters with the tragic flaw are ultimately so full of humanity that we are able to empathize with them. And we have humanity, too. And we see ourselves, I think. So he's really doing some amazing stuff in terms of, if you're into analysis like that, oh, look, that's Greek, oh, look, this, oh, look, this. You can also just come and go, this is a heck of a great story. You know, this is really cool. I love this language. I love this picture. I like the colors. And I think that's one of the things I found that I love so much about his work is the richness in the palette, visually and aurally, that the music and the sounds and the clothes, the voices, the colors of the world that are there don't look like other place. And I love it.
Okay. Let's talk about some of these performers. Priest Hughes, for one. I know him pretty much as a poet, among other things.
Sure. Well, Priest is. I know he's one half of the Recipe Poetry Guild, with Desmond 337 Jones. And, of course, we go way back. We go back to when Met was in the Arts Incubator, and we created a thing about Langston Hughes and the Poets of the Plains. He and Glenn North and I and 33 worked on that and had a ball doing that. And he reminded me one day, I don't know, we were trying to think of how many plays that he'd been. It was like some unbelievable number, like 17 or something like that, of the shows that he's done with us. And he's been, I think, in all the August Wilsons that I have done. And this is just a thrill to have him back in this role. He's playing Cainwell. And it's really kind of cool. I mean, Priest is, for me, kind of an artistic partner in doing these plays, as well as others. But his role in this and his presence and his talents are really very meaningful and rich. And then, of course, Sherry Mosley has also done it. We were laughing in rehearsal because I keep calling her by the wrong name because she played Grace in Piano Lessons. So the other day I kept telling them, put it in Grace's house. It's Grace's house. And they kind of went, who the heck is Grace? And she started laughing. She says, that's me in another play. And I have to kind of keep track of where they've been. And then Shauna Pina Downing was in Gem of the Ocean and was there. And then last year did Defying Gravity with us and is back to play Vera, Floyd's love interest. And let's see, who else is here?
Well, Alexis Dupree.
Yes, and she's new. So that's a real thrill. She was recommended by Robert Coppedge, who is also a little bit on the new side. He just came to work with us at Orphan's Home Cycle and was just wonderful. And I think in this young generation, also including Keenan Ramos in that, who's playing Floyd, we have a battery of both veteran and emerging talent. And I wouldn't say these guys are emerging. They've already emerged. You know, these are not baby actors. These are people who are of significance and consequence, and I think we're really lucky to have them here in Kansas City.
Yeah, I think costuming, because it's a period piece, mm-hmm. costuming would be a consideration.
Absolutely. Susan Proctor has been our designer, and Miss Anita Johnson, who joined us the year we did Parade. And she is a, I guess you could say she is a senior citizen, but I don't think of her that way. And Miss Anita and I met down at the River Market when she had a booth set up there. And the wind blew really hard and destroyed the booth. And so we happened to be there and looked in to help and reset it. And then we struck up a conversation, and turned out she sews brilliantly. And I brought her on that year to work on our costumes for Parade. And then she was back with us, has been kind of working with us ever since, and is really, really a huge contributor. That between Susan Proctor is also a director as well as a stage manager and has a lot of significant costume experience. So for me, it's a real blessing when I have them to kind of turn to go, please take care of this and make everybody look beautiful. And they do.
Good instructions.
Yeah.
Not as simple to accomplish, but good instructions nevertheless.
Well, if you have a good team, yeah, helps.
Yeah, well, sure, it sure does. The performances will run through March the 10th at the Rip's New Home, the Warwick Theater, 3927 Main. The number to call for more information, 816-569-3226, or online at mittkc.org. How is the Warwick shaping up?
I think it's really exciting, especially, you know, I think back sometimes to what it was like when we got there. I think it had been pretty well maintained, but the interior had been all chopped up. So what we've been really doing is working hard to continue to maintain and also unpack some things that have been sort of interestingly constructed, if you will.
Interestingly constructed, okay.
Yeah, and then open it up so we can make it a theater. The front lobby, I think, is a really exciting space. I really love it. And our audiences were real concerned when we were leaving the old space that the fun and the eclecticism of the old lobby not evaporate and us become just corporate theater.
Uh-huh.
And so we kind of really attended to that and tried to make it also comfortable and welcoming, but also retain some of those really interesting pieces that were in there. And so when you come, that you see some of the pieces of scenery and props and things like that that were in our work.
Sure. Now, you also want to talk about some of your upcoming schedule. You have things beyond August Wilson's Seven Guitars. Theaters have to schedule folks way out.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
This is, you have Shawshank Redemption coming up in early April.
Right. And that's the North American stage premiere. So what that means is that Shawshank Redemption, which was originally a novella written by Stephen King, and then turned into a film, a very, very famous movie, was adapted by Bob's friend Owen, basically. And so Owen was visiting, and they got together with this idea that, well, we've already opened it over there at the West End. There's not been an American or North American premiere of Shawshank Redemption over here, so we got it. And that's been pretty amazing. And his cast, we have only one out-of-town actor, a guy who's coming in from California to play the warden. But Keenan, who is in Seven Guitars, will be playing Red. Chris Rohde is playing Andy. And then all local cast filling out all the other parts. And really excited about that. So right now, Bob is performing in Australia. Then he comes home and comes right around and starts Shawshank Redemption rehearsals. So we have that. Yeah.
Keeps pretty busy, I assume, doing all that.
But that's really cool. I mean, I think we think about our city. There are always really interesting things going on here. I really wish that there's lots of times like now that I wish that we had a giant marketing budget kind of thing, so there'd be billboards all over town saying, Shawshank Redemption, y'all, and people would know. Because it is one of the movies that, for me, you know, I'm flipping around on Saturday afternoon if I happen to be home or something and that comes on, I am likely to pause, you know, and watch it. Like, pick it up wherever it is and watch it to the end. You know, it's kind of one of those that I know well enough that way. And I think there might be other people like me who feel that way about that story. And I'm really excited to see it performed and watch our local actors take a crack at this. And I'm sure it will go on in America and Canada beyond to have another life and in big fancy theaters. But I think it's going to be really cool that it's done at the Warwick in Kansas City first. And I'm really proud of that. I think it's really kind of a signature achievement, and I hope lots and lots of our folks come see it.
Now, you have other shows in there. Is City of Angels one of yours as well?
Yeah, City of Angels will be our closing piece of the season. It's, a 9-time Tony winner play. It's a musical. Cy Coleman did the music, and I want to say David Gerber. I have to double check. But just brilliant. It's kind of a film noir come to life. Michael Dragan and John Cleary play the writer of a novel and his signature character, the Sam Spade kind of detective, who are in constant competition with each other to have the most amazing life. And the character then begins to come to life and take over and boss him around and all this stuff. So it is a really, really cool piece. The music is awesome.
Yep. Not asking for any special steals here. Like, uh-huh. But what have you thought? Yeah, I'm sure you've thought about your next few seasons.
I think about it all the time. All the time I think about that. Well, it's sort of like a play pageant that goes on in your head, you know? Like this title. Uh-huh. And then somebody else will mention one, you kind of, oh, that too would be good. It's sort of like, wouldn't it be lovely if theaters could be like some amazing buffet and you could just have all of them?
Oh, well, my goodness.
Yeah, all of them at once. And what we're learning, of course, is you cannot have all of them at once, nor should you. And you have to kind of select. So I'm looking at several different things, also looking at some plays that are new, or at least new for us in Kansas City, and some classics. At least one musical probably in there, and considering two. Our community is so talented musically, and it's a lot of fun to do those. It seems like whenever we do a musical, everybody in the building's happy. So there's something to be said for that. And I really love them. I read a really awesome piece about a scientist and a writer last night. I liked that a lot. I'm not going to give you any sneak peeks of the titles. But this is the time of year that if in the next 30 minutes you think of a play that you're like, I sure wish you'd read this, then send it over because we just might. Those suggestions do get attended to. And so it's not a waste of time to hit me up on Facebook or send a note, to our box offices and say, I saw this at such and such. It was awesome. I'd really love to see this. I know two of our season ticket holders did that a few years ago, and we produced that play. They were so impressed with it and talked about it so much. I wrote for it, and had it sent in and read it, and I was like, this really is something. And so we got a chance to do that one. So those suggestions are not ignored.
Plays get recycled, I've noticed, and certain playwrights especially get recycled among the theater groups here in town. Pop up again.
Yeah. Well, it sort of depends on what's going on and what's in vogue. I've been real surprised that we haven't seen more Arthur Miller lately. I think he's always a super strong voice. And there's something about his work, sort of like Wilson, too. Wilson's more of a poet. But Miller has this amazing resonance. He's sort of a little bit moralistic, yet the power of what he has to say is so important that you can't really ignore it. And his writing, the question of integrity and stuff like that, his work in The Crucible, it's really hard to touch that.
Well, yeah.
That is kind of awesome. And Thornton Wilder, of course. And I'll always love that.
August Wilson's Seven Guitars runs now through March the 10th at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater. Again, the number you can call to get information is 816-569-3226, or you can go online. Isn't it isn't it valuable the way you can do so many things online these days? MetKC.org. In my opinion, community theater was saved by the invention of the internet and email. I remember back when they had a massive mailing budget for every show they had. And you mail out things too.
Yeah, we do.
But some of these smaller groups, they couldn't necessarily always afford that.
Well, and it does take a big drain. It's a lot.
But the way of email... cost as much to send one email out as you might as well sell 500, 600 of them as well. And that, in my opinion, that saved community theater quite a bit with all of the money. I once did publicity for one of the groups, and I know how much money it saved them in the long run. A wonderful invention, but you can, of course, get tickets or make arrangements, I should say, online.
And it's easy.
MetKC.org. You just click through, and they get the information, and they can get back to you, or you can get back to them, or however you want to do it.
Just make sure that you come. That's the one thing you can't do online.
That's true.
you can't see a live performance in the same room with amazing talent online.
Never replace live people on the stage.
It's different to be there.
It'll never happen. Karen Paisley, the artistic director of the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater. They are presenting August Wilson's Seven Guitars now through March the 10th at the Fabulous Soul Warwick Theater, just down the street from us here at KKFI, 3927 Main. If you need to MapQuest things, the zip code, you need a zip code, 64111. Thanks so much for being with us this
afternoon. It's a pleasure, always.
Hope the run goes well for you.
Thank you. We do too.
And let's think about upcoming. And she did. She said suggestions. She said the next 30 minutes.
Well, I'll listen longer than that.
Just email the theater with any suggestions you have. Apparently, she likes to read plays.
I do. Yeah.
It's a good thing.
It's like hanging out with friends.
That's right. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
We're going to take a break. Then when we return, we have more to tell you about on this wonderful Monday here in the city when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, brings the wildly popular animated adventure trilogy to a satisfying conclusion. Hiccup and his faithful dragon Toothless are forced to lead the Viking villagers to a new home when an evil dragon hunter brings an armada to enslave the flying reptiles. While the visuals and action are every bit as spectacular as you might expect, the real surprise is the story. It's actually quite moving. John Powell's lush score is a big plus, too, complementing the impressive visuals with an evocative atmosphere. The filmmakers didn't quit while they were ahead. They timed it just right. Fighting with My Family is a very pleasant surprise. This funny and heartfelt comedy tells the true story of Rhea Knight, a British teenage girl who, through grit and determination, became a WWE superstar named Paige. Florence Pugh plays Paige, the young girl mentored by Dwayne The Rock Johnson and trained by Vince Vaughn. Writer-director Stephen Merchant and a spot-on cast give this Rocky-style underdog tale enough humanity to overcome some of the sports movies cliches that are inherent in the story. You don't have to know a pile driver from a cactus clothesline to enjoy it. It's strange that a movie about scripted matches has genuine emotion. Fighting with My Family is a real crowd-pleaser. Also opening this week, Run the Race is a faith-based movie about the strains and bonds of athletic brothers. Arctic is a survival drama about a man stranded in the Arctic after a plane crash. Mads Mikkelsen stars. The Wandering Earth is a sci-fi opus about the attempt to move Earth when the sun is about to become a red giant. It's one of the biggest hits in Chinese cinema history. And The Changeover is a supernatural thriller from New Zealand. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. Freeze Frame!
Hello, this is Martha Lally, producer of KKFI 90.1 FM's Anything Goes show with Charles Ferrugia and Carol Jean Barta. Hey, Carol, did you know our show was probably accidentally voted the best local radio show by Kansas City Magazine a long time ago? I think that vote was rigged.
Well, listen for yourself. It's true. Anyone could be on the Anything Goes show. Local politicians, charlatans, theater people, and maybe your embarrassing relatives. You better listen.
That's on the Anything Goes show.
Friday at noon.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to journey now from Midtown. Could be several places. And we'll explain that in just a few minutes. Potluck Productions has been around for a number of years. We'll find out how long, if our guest knows. Leslie Ravel Zucker is with us right now. She is a producer with Potluck Productions. She, of course, is also a writer, a playwright. She is part of the Midwest Dramatist Center, the Dramatist Guild of America, and the New Play Exchange, probably among many other groups she's involved with. She's here today representing Potluck Productions. Welcome to the show, Leslie.
Hello, good afternoon.
Nice to have you here. Potluck Productions is one of the groups that, for the most part, it's women. They have women's plays. They have of various lengths and all that, but they have events that goes around. They have an event coming up on March the 3rd. It's this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock p.m. at the Yoga Patch. That's located in Waldo, 7235 Central. And Leslie is here. Tell the folks who don't know a little bit about Potluck Productions.
Sure, thank you. Potluck Productions, we are an organization dedicated to showcasing women's voices in theater, and even more specifically, voices local to Kansas and Missouri. So we do, now we do monthly, it used to be every other month, but now we're doing monthly readings of plays by women from Kansas and Missouri.
So I suppose, I'm guessing, you know, 1 month would be at the Arts Bar.
Correct.
Not too far from here.
We do every other first Friday at the Arts Bar, and then every other first Sunday at the Yoga Patch.
Ah, well, you have the coveted First Friday.
That's right. That's right.
Big events on First Friday, if you haven't heard them about them on this show and on other shows as well. But you have people reading their work, or probably they put together a cast, I guess.
Yeah, we work with fantastic actors in the area. Some professional, some amateur, but the quality is really kind of outstanding. We're very, very lucky to work with the people that we work with. And they get together, we have a rehearsal, and they read. It's professional in the way it's presented, not professional as in a paid position, but definitely professional in the quality that we are bringing.
Well, there's a lot of actors in Kansas City. There's a lot of competition for those few jobs that there are. So you probably have people that want to volunteer to read.
Absolutely.
Productions. So every month you have a list of productions. How do people get involved with this as, let's say, a writer? How would they do that?
Oh, we love finding new writers. You can go to our website and find all of the information. We have a document that explains the best way to format your work, what we're looking for. Mostly we do 10-minute plays, but we've just opened it up to longer, maybe 45-minute one-acts. So the sky's kind of the limit now. We do have a list of themes on our website. Each month has a different theme that we hope people will write to. As a writer myself, I always find it's really good for my creative juices to kind of be forced into a direction that opens me up in ways I never expected. So we are hoping that by providing some thematic ideas that will do that for our writers. And on the website is all the information, the email you send it to, and what type of font we would like, and how many pages, and everything.
Most people, well, I guess we all started writing in school. They say, write this assignment, write about this, and all of that. But you took it a step further. At what point did you decide this was your thing?
I think it came from submitting to so many festivals that did that. And I also write for a local high school, and the parameters are really specific. I write for a class, and each year is a different class size. So I might walk in and say, okay, write a play for 20 girls and 3 boys. And it's really hard, but I discovered that being given a really solid boundary in which to write really opened up my creativity in ways I didn't expect. Being forced into a box helped me think outside of the box. So we decided we wanted to take that to our writers and see if that really helped develop some new and interesting writing from the people submitting to us.
Now, among your notes, one of the things you wrote was a unique way that we use music.
Absolutely. On our first Fridays, I do a show
a 45-minute set of mostly original music before, so there's live music there. And then when you go to a series of short plays, there's often music in between each one to designate this play is over, now we're getting ready for the next one. It kind of sets the theme, it sets the mood, it happens while the scene change is happening. We do that live. So I sit down with whichever producer is directing, and they talk about what kind of feel they want or if they want a theme, and I perform live music in those little in-between moments. So you're getting this really unique live experience through the whole thing.
You're kind of setting the theme and mood for the evening.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And, but you do that through music.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
also a skilled writer.
Thank you. Yes.
What kind of things do you specialize in?
Ah, boy. Stories with heart. Stories kind of about the human condition. I am a fan of some version of the happy ending. I want I want redemption. I want forgiveness. And so that's where you'll find my kind of niche is yeah. right in that sweet spot of, hey, life is hard, but together we can get through it.
Well, sure. Sure. What would you encourage an aspiring writer to do? I guess the usual line is write about what you know.
Yes, write about what you know, but also about what interests you, what makes you want to know more. That write about what you want to know can be limiting, and it feels limiting. So I would say even more, write about what you want to know and do research and listen to conversations around you and the things that make you go back and back. Wait a minute, I'm still thinking about that idea 3 days from now. Write about those things.
Now, you have these monthly events. Mm-hmm. I remember in the past, I assume you still have the Potluck Production series of plays on particular nights, like a regular theater would have.
Well, it is just these one nights now. Yeah, yeah. So every other first Friday and the every other first Sunday is our bread and butter right now. That's what we're doing, is bringing these readings. Most of the work is in development, which means that it has been recently written or is in a second or third iteration. That it, as a writer of the spoken word, it is invaluable for a playwright to hear their words. Mm-hmm. You can read your play all day long, and you're still not going to get the feedback that you need from hearing your words spoken back. And then you add an audience and see, did they laugh where I wanted them to laugh? Did they, were they surprised? Were they bored? It's so informative and helpful and important.
I can see how that would be. I've had actors tell me, well, more directors than actors have said their actors need that feedback.
Absolutely.
And the feedback sometimes changes from night to night.
Sure, sure, it does. And that is really, like I said, I keep saying helpful, but it's just so helpful because now we're having the input from the actors and from the audience and from other writers, because we always invite the playwrights to come to the show as well. So it's a big old fest of input.
I was asking, I won't say who, I don't think she'd mind, but I don't think I should, told about her play going through this process. She submitted a play. Mm-hmm. Was pretty much out of her control then. There was a director, there was actors and all of that. I said, well, they probably didn't do it 100% the way you envisioned. She says, no, that's true. But, you know, in the long run, I think I actually liked it better. Anything you'd like to add?
Oh, absolutely. That is the best and worst thing about anything live like this, and I particularly see it in theater, is that I often submit to things that are out of town. So I don't have any control. And sometimes a director will call and say, hey, I have a question about this, or did you ever think about this? But usually they do whatever they want to do that you see when you get there. And it can be not the most pleasant experience, but they can find things that you didn't even know were in your own work, or at least that you didn't do on purpose. And those are beautiful, beautiful moments that can show you the depth and complexity of art.
In some way, things are easier today. The communications, I think, are more wide open. For instance, a director in Independence, who I had some of his cast on for the show, he had some questions about motivation. he had the guts to actually email the playwright. Now, you couldn't have done that in the old days. You could have you could have written the publisher or something like that, but you probably wouldn't have heard back very quickly.
No, not in time.
But he had an email for the playwright, and the playwright emailed him back and answered his questions. He said it made things so much easier.
I think it's wonderful. It's nice to be asked, and it's also nice to have to think about your own work. And what did I do on purpose, and what kind of accidentally fell out, and what hill am I going to die on? You know, what do I really believe in? And yes, you can change this, or, oh, I can see how this could be done that way, or no, this is what I wanted to say. If you want to do my work, say this. And all of that can happen in the same script.
Okay. All helpful information. We're speaking with Leslie Revelle Zucker. She is a producer with Potluck Productions and other organizations as well. We're talking about the event they have coming up on Sunday, March the 3rd at 3 o'clock p.m. at the Yoga Patch, 7235 Central in the Waldo area of Kansas City. You can go online to potluckproductionskc.com. We're speaking with Leslie about writing and all of that. Does Potluck Productions in general have a mission statement?
We do, and that is to celebrate and lift up the voices of women in theater. And that has gone back and forth. There was a time when we were producing full shows and accepted submissions from all over the United States, and that now has become localized, and we're really focusing on the women in our area, kind of a grassroots, let's bring this home. The four of us direct. We take turns directing, the four producers, and three of us are writers. One of us is a storyteller. So it's a really nice stew.
Should they be directed to go to one of the four of you in particular, depending on the content of their piece? Would that be easier for them?
As a playwright, if you go to the website, it lists the themes that we're all hoping to get. But, you know, every time I think I've got one of us figured out, I'm wrong. So you just submit. We read everything and we share everything. And if you don't hear back immediately, just wait. We just produced a reading of a play that was submitted, I think, 2 years ago, but it never quite fit into an evening. I mean, I think it's really important to remember that your work doesn't necessarily get rejected because it's not good. It just might not fit with the other things. And this finally was able to fit into a night, and it was wonderful, and she was surprised and pleased and thrilled, and it went really well.
I guess I was thinking in terms of, well, I know Joyce Slater, one of your partners in this venture. And she's, for the most part now, a storyteller, although she is a fine actress. I was in several plays with her many moons ago.
Yeah, and a wonderful director.
Anyone who's been acting for a while probably wants to at least try directing, and it works the other way around. Directors want to be actors as well. It goes both ways. But, you know, would something she would do would be different from something you would do?
We do have different tastes and flavors, I guess. Glendora Davis, who is directing this upcoming one. Glendora and Joyce both especially appreciate a really witty sense of humor. They're really, really good with humor. They work well with that kind of comic timing. I tend to like the kinds of stories that I like to write, which are those stories of redemption and hope and relationship. Mary Beth is very fond of slices of life and like taking a snapshot of what life really looks like. That's the work she tends to write. That's, I think, the work she tends to gravitate to. Ladies, if you're listening and I'm wrong, I apologize.
I don't know. When it comes to dramatic pieces, and that also goes for comedy and things like that, I don't know that you're really wrong. It's just a matter of interpretation of a particular piece. And shoot, you'll find performers will take the same piece and make it seem different sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that must frustrate. That goes to an earlier question I asked, I know. But that must frustrate you to a degree. They can interpret it different ways.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. You cannot. There's no way to protect your work from being changed, which is both bad and good. And I think that the good side is that it can change and grow and become something new and more than you ever intended.
I don't know. Do you ever do things based on something that personally happened to you. Is that easier to write if you take that that tact with it?
Well, you know, that's a it's a funny thing. It can be, but it can also be dangerous, because if you get too caught up in the facts of what happened, it can lead to some really stilted or boring art. Or if you've got something that doesn't work and it happens to be the thing that is the most, quote, true, as in factual, if you're not willing to let go of that, and that's the danger of writing about things that actually happened, is that sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it's not interesting, or it's difficult to do on stage. So that's, that is a dangerous, dangerous road, I think. More writing about feelings and ideas of things that happened than exact instances that happened.
Oh, sure. Well, I like to ask writers about motivation. Composers, too. I've asked computers, do you hear that music in your head before you actually write it down? Mm-hmm. And some will say yes, some will say no. Some will say, I don't write it down, I just remember it. And I find that really, really hard. I remember seeing Johnny Carson years ago do an interview with Truman Capote. And it was long enough ago, he asked him about In Cold Blood. Capote said, well, I wrote the book four times. It was different each time.
Yeah.
They told me that this was the best one. Says, but I wrote it four times.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, does that happen to you? Do you tear it up and redo it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sometimes you start from scratch. With music, I might have a song. I had a song that I tried to write for about 10 years. And one little piece of it made it into the final version. And finally, I found the song. But it took 10 years to get from I have this idea to the actualization of the idea. And some of it was the same and some of it was not. And sometimes you find out if your play is not working, sometimes you find out you're actually trying to fit two plays and mash them together. And if you can find where the two stories are and tease them out into two separate scripts, oh, then everything just magically works out.
Well, different things come to people in different ways. I remember reading in one of Steve Allen's books, he said he keeps a portable tape, or kept, he's gone now, I know, but he was alive when he said this. He said he keeps a portable tape recorder beside the bed, and even if he dreams something that really is remarkable, says he'll just say a little something into that tape recorder. He says, now sometimes the next day it makes no sense.
Yeah, well.
But sometimes it does. But he got it through dreaming, I suppose.
Yeah.
Do you get it through various things? Are you more liable to be inspired by, because you like slice of life events, so.
I do. There's a lot of, almost like a word association game where I'll see something or hear something and then all of a sudden that'll just do a bloop, bloop, bloop train of thought, and thank goodness for technology. Just pick up the phone and record the idea because it never happens when you're sitting with a paper and a pen trying to write. It's always when you're driving or elsewise occupied.
Oh, sure. What about the famous writer's block? How do you get past something like that?
I either go do something that kind of fills me up creatively, kind of three different techniques. I'll go do something physical, laundry, take a walk, just because I found if I go do something else, it's still working in the back of my mind, and it'll fix it. Or I just make myself write, and I know it's probably going to stink, but you know what? I can fix bad writing. You can't fix an empty page.
That's true. Especially if it's your own writing.
Exactly.
I should get back on subject. The Potluck Productions presentation is happening this Sunday. And if we've sparked any interest in you, I suggest perhaps going and seeing the event in person.
Yeah, we're real excited about it. Like I said, Glendora Davis is directing. Her theme is C'est la vie, and it's a real look at, you know, this is life. Such is life. This is what we bring to the table.
She's directing. Did she write it?
No, three different playwrights. She's doing three short plays, three different playwrights. Should have written them down.
No, that's fine. That's fine. They can go to your website at potluckproductionskc.com. We're speaking with Leslie Revelle Zucker, and we're talking about the presentation they have coming up this Sunday at 3:00 p.m. at the Yoga Patch in Waldo. This is one of two locations where they have presentations going on, and this is the one happening this Sunday. I just want to prepare the people basically for what they would want to see, and the playwrights that are going to be happening.
Deborah Cole, Lavinia Roberts, and then one of my pieces are the three pieces that Glendora is directing. And then we do our readings at 3 o'clock, and if enough people stick around and have time on a Sunday afternoon, then I will do a little musical presentation, play some live music, acoustic, in the little seating area.
So you have the infamous audience discussion afterwards?
We don't, actually. We would like to move into that more. So we're hoping. We do ask that if anybody has commentary that they stay and give it to the playwright or give it to us. We don't do an official, and now we're doing a talk back. But we do ask for feedback, definitely.
Well, sure. Well, that's really the purpose of doing it. You talked about getting the audience's reaction. Mm-hmm. I guess the playwright can tell by when the laughs happen or when they don't. And it's not always laughs, I guess. It's a kind of a dramatic silence where sometimes you feel things and you really can't laugh.
Absolutely.
There are things. We went into this sort of on the show last week. You know, sometimes the audience is afraid to laugh at things, and somebody has to lead them out of that.
It's always very helpful to have an experienced audience member, I guess you would call it, somebody who is okay laughing, being the first person to laugh, someone who is comfortable being the one who's like, well, okay, but I think that's funny, so I'm going to do this out loud. Because once that seal is broken, the audience tends to be, people tend to be much more comfortable.
And in our politically correct society today, sometimes we're afraid to be the first one to laugh.
That's true. And
that's a big loss, I think.
Yeah.
I think you'll look at some of those pieces from years ago. I mean, people laughed at absurd things. Things that today we would say was politically incorrect, of course. But but it is funny on a certain level, and it's also a sign of the times. Years from now, what will people say about these times
as far as
things that are written there? Are we too uptight? What do you think?
Oh, boy. That is a loaded question. I tend to think probably overall we're too uptight. I think we're too ready to be offended. We're too ready to be hurt,
perhaps,
instead of giving people and situations the benefit of the doubt.
Well, coming up, you know, this Sunday, March the 3rd at 3 o'clock p.m., this presentation of Potluck Productions. I remember back when they had A Night of Plays by, I can't remember now if it was the same one acts every night or if they switched. Maybe both.
I think that it was several nights of the same plays as done in full production instead of just as readings, yeah.
But this is coming up then on March 3rd, 3 o'clock p.m. at the Yoga Patch. Sounds easy to find, 7235 Central. Any helpful hints?
It's behind Sutherland's, just off of Warnell.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's, and the Sutherland's is Quick Trip, Sutherland's, just behind all that is the Yoga Patch.
The Yoga Patch. Mm-hmm. What? They have yoga classes there?
They do. They have yoga classes. They have meditation classes. And it's connected to the, oh my goodness, I can't think of what it's called, but where you lay in the water and just meditate, and like a sensory deprivation.
Oh, sure.
Situation.
Yeah, some people say they relax more with others around. Some people can't relax at all unless they're completely alone in a situation like that. But that's what happens, and you can ask them questions, of course, at the Yoga Patch in Waldo. If they have questions about the presentation, can they leave an email or a message at potluckproductionskc.com?
Yes, you can reach us through the website. We have a Facebook page. If you go to Facebook and look for Potluck Productions, and you can definitely email us through the website or message us through Facebook. We are available.
Sounds very interesting. Leslie Ravel Zucker, and she is a producer with Potluck Productions. She's also a writer, obviously, and teach writing.
I have done workshops, yes. I used to teach at university. Now I teach workshops from time to time, and I should say, before we run out of time, that we're doing Fringe again this year. We took a year off, and now we're going to be back at Kansas City Fringe Festival Potluck
writing and...
Do you know yet which theater location?
Oh, if only we knew.
No. Oh, you don't know.
Those are assigned a little further on down the road.
Well, you'll have to get on her about that. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Potluck Productions, the presentation will be on March 3rd at 3 o'clock p.m. If you're interested, but you're not ready to take the first step, I would suggest going to one of their presentations, seeing what it's like, and try visualizing, as it were, if something you're interested in writing would fit into a presentation like
Absolutely.
That would be the best. Thank you so much. Leslie Revelle Zucker is with us here on the Arts Magazine Show. Thank you and all your fellow producers.
Thank you.
For all of this. The Jazz Insider is coming up next. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3, and then in true KKFI tradition, we'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.